afternoon. I'm Sheila Brummer in for Mary Hartnett this week on The Exchange. Today we check out a new report concerning children in the state of Iowa and take a closer look at the local issues of child abuse and hunger. Later we'll be joined by the local leader, the NAACP, to explore Juneteenth. We'll preview a fundraiser for Camp High Hopes and more and give you details on a live broadcast planned for Friday morning at the Dorothy Pico Nature Center outside of Sioux City. We start our show with the loss of a local legend who worked nonstop for the less fortunate in our community. Frank Lemire died over the weekend at the age of 69 after a short battle with bile duct cancer.
We stand for a silent prayer and pledge of allegiance, and as you stand for the silent prayer, let's try to remember the Frank Lemire family, if you would.
That's Sioux City Mayor Bob Scott honoring the memory of activist and Democratic political leader Frank Lemire before this week's City Council meeting. Mayor Scott also said Frank was an advocate for people who need help but don't know where to turn. Frank was their voice. He will be greatly missed. Frank Lemire spent most of his adult life as an activist. He lived in South Sioux City and worked as a member of the American Indian Movement in the 1970s. He recently talked to a local Iowa public radio reporter about the Sweat Lodge and how it helps Native American community members fight substance abuse.
This community is in the Native community and the greater community is in dire need of healing. It's in dire need of understanding one another and of coming together. I think with the exercise here at Jackson Recovery in the Native community is going to go a long way to building bridges, to fostering understanding, and to helping the Native community get well. I hate to say it, but we have to make everybody understand things in the Native community and maybe even in the greater community with regard to alcohol, drug abuse, opioid use in our community has probably never been worse. And we don't talk about that. Everybody is important, and I think it's high time in our community we look at the commitment that we must have to the members of our community, Native and non-Native. This is a step toward healing, a step in that
direction. Lemire was a leader in the Democratic Party, serving as a chairman of the National Native American Caucus and a delegate to the Democratic National Convention many times over. He recently received an honorary doctorate from Nebraska Wesleyan University. It was an honor that meant a lot to him. Frank Lemire was a friend to many from all walks of life. His list of achievements too long to list during this short broadcast. Karen Mackey is the director of the Sioux City Human Rights Commission and a longtime friend of Frank Lemire. She spent several minutes talking to us about Frank's public and private life.
You know, I first met him in about 1991. I was living in Lincoln, going to law school there. And I read in the newspaper that the softball team, the North Americans, was going to be playing in Lincoln. And law school's a very, very white experience. And just the fact that there's a Native American softball team and they're going to be here. I remember I took some of my books with me and I went and sat in the stands and watched them play. And afterwards, I had a chance to meet Frank, you know, shook his hand and talked to him for a few minutes. And it was just a great conversation. And he kind of buoyed me up and told me to keep doing what I was doing and that I that was something I needed to do, that we needed more Native American lawyers. So that was the first time I ever met him.
He was the kind of person that did lift people up to inspire them to be more than they even thought they could be.
He did. You know, when you look back on his life, Frank wasn't doing the things he did for himself. He was always doing it to lift up other people, to help other people. He spent a lot of time thinking about others and what they needed and trying to give people the encouragement that they needed.
And he championed so many different causes, causes that most people just don't pay attention to.
Right. You know, I remember thinking for a number of years that white clay was just something that was never going to happen. You were never going to be able to shut down the liquor stores there. It took Frank 20 years. He never gave up. He kept at it. He did that with a lot of things. He just never gave up, and he kept going in a positive direction moving forward. I think some of that is because he was an athlete. He realized that you don't get an immediate reward always, that you have to keep working. And he just did that. He just kept working on whatever cause it was. He kept bringing it up to people, kept talking to people. He didn't necessarily badger people, but he kept the discussion going.
And I think hopefully that's something that will continue. I know he's really worked with substance abuse in the community, homelessness as well.
Absolutely. Those are a couple of things that he has been working on recently, and I know that the people involved in those things are going to keep his work going. Hope Street is about to open up by St. Thomas Episcopal Church. So that will be a facility that will house up to 10 men living in sobriety. And he continued to work on issues of homelessness, addiction. We are continuing to try to work on helping people find solutions, especially for the Native community, but for everyone, regarding addiction issues.
I know that this was pretty much kind of a shock. We only just recently heard that he was sick. And to have him gone so quickly is just a big shock, I think, to the whole community.
I think so. It's been less than a month since when we first found out that he was ill. So it happened very quickly. I think the most important thing, though, really is his love for his family and how involved he was with his family. He was a really good husband and father, and he listened to his wife. They were a great team. She was very supportive of him, quietly supportive, but she really enabled him to do the work he did, and he in turn lifted her up whenever he could. He was a great family man. Yes.
I know cancer has actually really impacted his family. I know with his younger daughter, she died of cancer about 5 years ago.
Yes, she was 21 years old when she died of leukemia. And when I heard that Frank passed away Sunday on Father's Day, I thought of that because he's with her now.
That's Karen Mackey from the Sioux City Human Rights Commission. Council members remembered Frank Lemire, including council member Alex Waters.
But our community definitely lost an incredible advocate yesterday, Frank Lemire. He's come to council numerous times to talk to us about different issues or bring attention to something. And you won't meet someone, I think. I think about a lot of people that are activists or advocating for something, and a lot of times they do so ruling with that iron fist or, want to scream at you or spit in your face. And Frank was always pretty cordial. He was always willing to talk about solutions and what we could do and how we could work together. Even I think about his work with Representative Steve King. Even if you see disagreements in some areas, if there's opportunity to work together, try to make a difference in the world, I think Frank was the first one to try to do it. And so we need more people like him in this world, and he will be genuinely missed.
Waters spoke about the ability of Frank Lemire to work with others with different backgrounds, political beliefs. And it was back in April that Siouxland Public Media explored the relationship between Frank Lemire and Republican Congressman Steve King.
A prayer led by a member of the Meskwaki tribe opened the Sioux City Healing Summit Wednesday morning, a gathering of local and national leaders, joining forces at an event hosted by the Siouxland Street Project and the Community Initiative for Native Children and Families.
They guide us in what we do.
This group first met last June to find solutions to homelessness, substance abuse, and mental health issues.
We have come to that place and we have come to understand that nothing changes unless somebody's made to feel uncomfortable. Nothing changes unless we made ourselves uncomfortable.
That's Frank Lemire, a Native American activist who also represents the Four Directions Center.
We need to give voice to those who have none, and I'm doing my part, and I want the rest of the community to step up.
Lemire says a dozen Native Americans have died because of homelessness and drug or alcohol abuse in the last couple of years.
We're not connecting people with services. We're not reaching them, and that's what we're seeking to do now.
Several years ago, the region lost funding from Indian Health Services for a rehab center and halfway house. And Lemire says the problem keeps getting worse.
Our community needs to heal, and that's what we're about. That's why we're here. The situation with opioid addiction in our Native and non-Native community never been worse than it is right now, and I lived a long time here.
Also joining the discussion, Congressman Steve King, who represents the 4th Congressional District.
And with the opioid crisis taking over 70,000 American lives, some of that's here, right here, and some of that could be alleviated.
Earlier this month, the Republican asked Congress to provide money for a detox center for the area and more.
We submitted a request to put report language into the appropriations bill that's coming up. And that language describes what's going on here in this city. About 10 years ago, when Indian Health Services pulled their support out of this community, and the damage that this community has experienced, especially among Native families.
Lemire says Congressman Steve King has been an advocate for the Native American community. The two randomly met at the Omaha airport 3 years ago and started working together.
And Frank was a little tentative, like he'd been reading my press clippings, and instead we talked like two human beings. And out of that conversation came, I learned about this problem here, and I learned about the Winnebago land issue down on the Missouri River.
I have strong political ties, but I throw those out the window. Steve King has strong political ties. We throw this out the window. There's people here who have no voice, and sometimes I think we need to put all that aside and get down to give voice to those who have none, and that's what we're going to do.
Two men on opposite sides of the political spectrum trying to improve life in their community. In Sioux City for Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer. Steve King spoke on the House floor just before noon today, and here's a little bit about what he had to say.
I wanted to conclude with this, that the lead on this effort has been Mr. Frank Lemire. He has been a statesman for the Winnebagos for years and also for Native Americans in a broader sense, especially in the upper Midwest. He tragically passed away 2 days ago. His funeral is today. He worked on these projects for a lifetime, and it's very fitting that we take action on one of his initiatives here in this Congress today, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to take up H.R. 184, which also transfers the land back to the Winnebagos that they should so rightfully have. So I thank you, Madam Speaker, and I yield back the balance of my time.
That's Congressman King honoring the memory of Frank Lemire on the House floor today. Many friends and family members expressed their love and admiration for Frank Lemire on social media. The editor of the Sioux City Journal, Bruce Miller, says, quote, "Frank was one of the most tireless advocates I've known. We shared a love of many things, movies included. He probably saw as many as I did and never hesitated to compare notes. He always had a smile and words of wisdom. Siouxland is better because he was here to lead, instruct, comfort, and confront. I will miss him every day." Jeanette Hopkins from Sioux City says, "He changed my life's journey. He said we must become uncomfortable for any real change to occur. His words resonate with me every day. Powerful words and powerful actions. We lost our hero. We lost a good man. The best of human beings. His spirit will live on and his words will impact us forever." The Northwest Iowa Sierra Club released this statement on Facebook. "We are saddened by the passing of our friend Frank Lemire, a social and environmental justice warrior who always fought for respect for the planet and its citizens." And Woodbury County Sheriff Dave Drew said on Facebook, "I will remember Frank as a caring person with a warrior spirit, his passion and zeal unmatched. Go rest high on the mountaintop." Funeral services took place this morning for Frank Lemire in Winnebago, Nebraska. The Native American community also lost another prominent community member. Kurt St. Cyr died over the weekend. The 60-year-old was vice chairman of the Winnebago Tribe in Nebraska and a well-known musician. St. Cyr described his music as real soulful and funky. He began his musical passion with the drums, but then he was drawn to the harmonica. He possessed a vibrant voice for vocals that you can hear here. St. Cyr shared the stage with numerous artists, including Santana, Smokey Robinson, Dr. John, and Buddy Guy. He performed in many venues throughout the region and beyond, and he took part in many Saturday in the Park music festivals in Sioux City. Founder Dave Bernstein shared his thoughts about St. Cyr.
lucky to know Kurt from the early days of Saturday in the Park. I always enjoyed going to see other gigs he played for other folks, you know, downtown, different venues throughout time. I saw that he had played the first five Saturday in the Parks. I didn't quite realize until I was looking at this array of posters we have hanging up in an office and saw that literally from the first one through the fifth one, he'd played every one. And then he'd also done some guest sit-ins with a few other folks. So I think he charted in at seven Saturday in the Parks in total. So that was pretty cool. I think best I can tell, that's a record. I don't think Ray McAvoy pulled off that many. So my memory of Kurt was that he was a super talented guy. I can't remember who introduced us early on. It would have been sometime in 1990. I don't know if I went to see him live or not, but I remember him playing a Saturday in the Park, and he just had an amazing voice, just a sweet voice. Just was a great harp player as well. It's a super easy, chill guy to deal with. As well. So I always enjoyed seeing him personally. I saw him many, many times personally in different clubs and different places, including, I think, probably most recently, I know multiple times at Indigo Palette. John Glaza had him play there a number of times, I think, with a band that was comprised with a few folks from Sioux City and a few folks that came up from Omaha. It's a really good band. And yeah, he's a great guy. I was lucky to see him here back. Might have been February or March. I ran into him at Dachau, and we caught up, which was good. Generally, what he was doing and what I was doing, and you know, talked about just you know some stuff in the future, finishing some projects, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, that was you know, just guy was a talented guy, and from you know, so close to Sioux City as well, was super refreshing. Really, Kurt was a very traditional blues player. You know, it wasn't like the blues scene was really super deep around here, nor necessarily in Winnebago. Kind of to randomly have us start Saturday in the Park and then have someone say, oh, you know, you should call. You know, such a pleasant surprise. And, you know, I was all of maybe 24 at the time. So what did I know, even to find, you know, anybody. So it was great. It was just really, really good to get connected.
And I think this week kind of taught us that things can change quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I was shocked to hear of Kurt's passing. I think a lot of folks were. Kurt seemed young, too young for that to happen, for sure. And I know that was the feeling. I ran into John Glaser this morning, and kind of the same thing. I mean, just hit pretty hard, especially this close to the festival.
It's been a shocking week, too, with Frank Lemire's passing as well.
Yeah, it's big, big loss for not only the Native American community, but much more broadly. I think Siouxland as a whole, this part of the world. I mean, those guys were both super active in their local communities and even broader in the collective area. Kurt was on the tribal council for many, many years. Kurt was one of those guys that you were always psyched when you ran into him. You know, he always had a good conversation. He's just the nicest guy. Yeah, I mean, it's just a bad week for a lot of people. Big losses, big shoes to fill. What both those guys have contributed is something that inspires a number of folks and can inspire a number of folks as well. So I guess that's how legacies live on. Both Kurt and Frank's family, you know, obviously, I think a lot of people really have them in their thoughts and prayers, and I just think that it's important for them to know that a lot of us were inspired, have been inspired, probably will continue to be inspired by what they've both done. I can tell you for sure that I look at Saturday in the Park and I will think of Kurt. I always think of Kurt, and I, you know, just kind of chuckled when I saw the posters with the early days and thought back to that. It was a great time, and a great time for me, and I always tried to introduce Kurt and check out his set because I loved his music. And so, you know, it's a bummer. Really sad.
And that's Saturday in the Park founder, Dave Bernstein. Bernstein says St. Cyr could have easily pursued a bigger career in music, but chose to make a difference locally for his community and family. Kurt St. Cyr believed his music reflected his real life experiences in the blues genre. He said, "We Native Americans have the blues. We all have a story to tell, but I don't see many of my people singing about it. Again, that's the words of the late Kurt St. Cyr. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return on The Exchange, we're going to explore the latest Iowa Kids Count reports from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, hear from local experts on the issues of child abuse and hunger.
Marissa Nadler is known for her incredible voice, and on her solo album For My Crimes, she pairs it with other women vocalists like Angel Olsen, Kristen Control, and Sharon Van Etten. Nadler will talk about why she enjoys harmonizing with other women and how she ended up opening up for Swedish hard rock band Ghost. It's Marissa Nadler on the next World Cafe.
World Cafe tonight at 6 on Siouxland Public Media. Join us then. Welcome back to The Exchange. I'm Sheila Brummer in for Mary Hartnett. Iowa has received one of the top rankings for child well-being in the country. That's according to the annual Kids Count report released this week by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Statewide, the survey shows improvement in just about every category. Iowa was ranked third overall in the country. The report shows rates in Iowa for kids who live in poverty. It showed it dropped significantly since the year 2010 and is above the national averages. However, here in Woodbury County, there is an increase of children living in poverty. It is up here in Siouxland, up more than 18% since 2000. Noah Berger is with the foundation, the Annie E. Casey Foundation. He says, while Iowa's made progress, one in eight kids still live in poverty.
What do you do to make progress? How can you make sure that all of your young people, whatever community they grow up in, whatever their race, have the chance to succeed? In Iowa currently, 64% of fourth graders are not proficient readers. And that's a problem, because if you can't read by fourth grade, it's hard to learn a lot of the other things that you need to learn the rest of your school time.
The proficiency rate for fourth graders in Woodbury County in 2017 was 72%. High school graduation rates for Woodbury County increased more than 6%, and the number of eighth graders proficient in math rose 17% with a total rate of 74%. But that means about a quarter of the students are not up to speed in mathematics. Cases of child abuse and neglect increased by almost 74% in that same time frame, from 2000 to 2017. The state average, 26%. The Mercy One Child Advocacy Center works to help victims of child abuse and sexual assault. Amy Scarman is the manager of the center. She talked to Siouxland Public Media about the increase over the years.
And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. We've done a lot better as a society for making people more aware that this is happening and how to report it. So when we educate more, people are going to be more likely to go out there and make those reports on things that they see that are concerning to them. And then I think the other piece of it, too, is it's difficult to compare child abuse statistics, for example, this year compared to 5 years ago, because the laws have changed. So there's different categories of abuse now than there were before. So comparing the two can sometimes be a little difficult.
So the abuse laws are stronger to help children?
There's just different categories. It's not necessarily a stronger or weaker type of law. It's just that things change. For example, a year ago or so, DHS used to have a category where juvenile offenders, they might open a case on that. They've since changed that law, so maybe those won't be necessarily accepted by Department of Human Services as a child abuse case. They may be instead investigated by law enforcement, but they may not be captured in these numbers.
How big of a problem do you see child abuse being in Siouxland?
I mean, it's definitely here. As much as we'd like to believe that those things don't happen in our community, it definitely does. I think, again, though, we've done a really great job at acknowledging that it's happening, and we're giving the public and kids themselves and parents and caregivers the tools to better handle those really difficult situations or when they are seeing abuse to make the report.
And what are some of the things to look out for?
Oh, there's so many things. I think particularly with those people who work a lot with kids, if you're around those children a lot, you know what is kind of typical behavior for them. So if you're starting to see something that is significantly different or just not like them, then I think it's really important to start asking them some questions about what might be going on. Particularly with sexual abuse, those are often disclosures that are really difficult to make for kids and for adults to get information from children about. So I think just really keeping an eye on kids and seeing different types of behavior, seeing concerning types of behavior. Obviously, with physical abuse, that's a little easier to identify because generally you can see injuries, and that's just more visible, I think. But it's the sexual abuse or emotional abuse or neglect. Those are harder to identify.
And is it usually someone that they know?
It is. You know, we preached for so long about stranger danger, and that really just isn't the norm. Probably 95% of the time, kids know who their abuser is, especially when you're talking about sexual abuse. People just don't gain that type of access to a child without building up a lot of trust in a relationship usually. So they unfortunately take advantage of that relationship that they build by pushing the boundaries and being able to access a child in order to sexually abuse them, unfortunately.
So there's some kind of grooming process that takes place.
Absolutely, yes.
What are some of the services that you provide for children in the region?
What we do is when there is an open child abuse investigation, either by the Department of Human Services or by law enforcement, then they will make a referral to us either to do a forensic interview. So we sit down with the child and get all of the information from them in their own words about what might have happened to them. We also do medical exams for kids who have experienced abuse. And then we also have ongoing therapy that we're providing for kids that is trauma-focused and really specific to their needs. And then while they're at the Child Advocacy Center, we're really focusing a lot more on their mental health and referring them to the right place, because we want to make sure if they are having a lot of trauma or have a need for trauma-specific services that we're making sure they get to the right place.
How many cases of abuse do you guys look through each year?
I think last year saw right around 750 kids. And we see kids from a pretty big area. So most of Northwest Iowa and a little bit into Nebraska and South Dakota, we're seeing kids. And we'll see kids basically from birth to 18, just depending on the services.
And all walks of life or all?
Yep, from everywhere, yes. Unfortunately, abuse doesn't really know any socioeconomic or any other kinds of bounds, so it really does occur across all populations. I just think it's really important to, it's part of all of our jobs to make sure kids are safe. And when we start to acknowledge that abuse is happening in our community and that we are responsible for taking care of our kids, I think we're all really playing an important part in keeping kids safe.
And in the Iowa Kids Count information just released, it showed the use of food assistance jumping by 242% in almost 20 years. The state average was 173%. Linda Schott is the executive director at the Food Bank of Siouxland. And the numbers from the Iowa Kids Count show the number of individuals receiving benefits for food. Of course, you provide food for anyone who requests it.
Absolutely correct. So we are helping individuals from, you know, infants through senior citizens, families, individuals, everybody in between. So we do, however, have access to some wonderful data as well. We are part of the Feeding America Network. And one of the advantages we have with Feeding America is they have the ability to do those deep dives, and they really give us a lot of statistical information. So each year, and it was just in May, so it's brand new data, they release a study called Map the Meal Gap. And Map the Meal Gap dives down to the county level. So it's great to have this new information and then contrast the two a little bit. We obviously look at it a bit differently in our community in Woodbury County now. We are looking at not how many children are receiving assistance, but rather what's the food insecurity rate. Food insecurity is defined as people who don't know where their next meal is going to come from. So these are 18 and younger, and they are food insecure. So what does that number look like? And in Woodbury County, it's 16.3%. So
wow.
That's a huge number. That translates to 4,390 food insecure children. Isn't that scary?
That is horrible.
Yes, it's really, really a frightening number. And the thing about that is I really worry about their 5, their 8, their 12, and their food insecure. So if you're 5 and you're food insecure, what are you going to do about it? You know, you don't have the wherewithal to solve that on your own. And secondly, think about what's going on for the 5-year-old, the 8-year-old, the 12-year-old. They're in the throes of physical development, intellectual growth, emotional development. And what impact will not having sufficient nutrition have on all those children? That's really disturbing and alarming to me. So it all boils down to that bottom line, which is hunger, especially in this part of the world where we're feeding so many people, hunger is unacceptable. How can we have people that are missing meals? That's what Map the Meal Gap is talking about. Missing meals. We have children, adults, seniors, those who are ill, those who are needy in many ways, missing meals. And then you can take that to the next step, which is in what constitutes a meal. If you heat up some ramen noodles, have you had lunch? Is that a good meal? Is that sufficient nutrition? Is that going to provide, again, talking specifically about children, is that going to provide everything they need? I would question that.
Wow. And I know, you know, it's summer break. Kids mm-hmm. aren't in school.
That's right.
The meals will not be there. What can people do?
You know, one of the things that we talk a lot about is in Siouxland, we are richly blessed because our local school district is well aware the children aren't in school, so they're not getting lunch. And maybe they were even getting breakfast at school. So what happens in the summer? So they do those free meals during the week at various area elementary schools. And they've even created a mobile program. So they're out in that bus and they're helping to provide meals that way. So there are supports available through those kinds of avenues. And I'm so proud of the district for stepping up and recognizing that not only are they providing education for children, but in many cases, they're also providing the best nutrition they have, and they don't want to stop doing that during the summer. I will say from the food bank's perspective, it can be a very, very busy time because, as you said, now these children are home. Mom and Dad haven't needed to provide lunch because they're at school. They might not be providing breakfast because they can take them to school for that. Now they're responsible for 3 meals a day, and if their budget doesn't allow for that, they need to go to the food pantry and ask for some food assistance so they can bring home what they need to feed themselves and their children. So pantries, if anything, can be busier than ever in the summer months.
That's true. And every time we talk to you, you always say, we had the record, unfortunately, the record month for distributing food. Is that still the case?
Absolutely. February, March, and April are the top 3 months in terms of food distributed in a month in our entire history. It came down a little bit in May, and of course we won't have any June statistics until the month is over, but still incredibly high. We are on track for our fiscal year, which ends the end of September. We are on track to distribute approximately 2.5 million pounds of food. That's incredible, and that will shatter all existing records.
And that's Linda Scheid from the Food Bank of Siouxland with insight on the issue of hunger facing young people in our community. We also want to thank Amy Scarman, manager of the Mercy One Child Advocacy Center, for talking about child abuse in Woodbury County. There was one change in the positive direction in the county. According to the Iowa Kids Count survey, the number of teen births in Woodbury County fell by almost 40% from the years 2000 to 2017. When it comes to education, having a good place to learn about the world around us is a good thing. Coming up next on The Exchange, find out where kids can be one with nature this summer break.
What happens when Lauryn Hill discovers doo-wop and Prince changes his diet to starfish and coffee? Well, we call those game changers. And on the next mixtape dance party, we'll be playing nothing but game changers. 9 p.m. Wednesday, Siouxland Public Media.
I keep saying starfish and coffee, maple syrup and jam, butterscotch clouds.
And listen tonight for mixtape dance party with host Earl Corlick. You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Sheila Brummer, doing the show live this afternoon for Mary Harnett. So are your kids having a good summer vacation away from school? They probably are, right? Well, one place for kids to check out this summer is the Dorothy Pico Nature Center. Here's naturalist Teresa Croyd, who coordinates the summer camps and learning experiences out at the Nature Center.
We run summer day camps here at the Dorothy Pico Nature Center, and then new this year we have some for kids in the smaller towns in Woodbury County out in our county parks at Little Sioux Park near Correctionville, Southwood Conservation Area near Smithland, and we have one at Snyder Bend Park near Salix.
And what kind of things can the kids do?
They will learn about animals and plants of the area. Some camps, depending on the ages, they will go fishing. They might learn survival activities. A few of the older kids will learn how to kayak. They get to meet live animals. Some of our reptiles, turtles, and snakes, and potentially some of our raptors are owl and hawk. So we're always trying to help get them exposed to the outdoors, being excited about doing things outdoors and learning about wildlife of the area.
That's what I was going to say. A lot of kids in the summer, they want to sit in front of the TV. They want to play with their smartphones. This is a chance for them to actually be exposed, like you said, to nature.
Yes. We really want to get them away from those electronic devices and expose them to the outdoors. There is something called nature deficit disorder that is now there's been a couple of different books on it, so we are always trying to get kids and people reconnected with nature and the outdoors to have that kind of sense of calm and awareness and enjoyment in being outdoors.
And thanks to Teresa Croyd out at the Nature Center for filling us in on some of those things that kids can do this summer. For more information on the summer programs and events at the Dorothy Pico Nature Center, go to their website, woodburyparks.org. And coming up this Friday on Siouxland Public Media, we're going to be live at the Dorothy Pico Nature Center to celebrate the first day of summer. Listen to it. The great outdoors right there. Our broadcast on Friday will start at 9 o'clock in the morning. We're going to explore the great outdoors, including the Lust Hills, the Nature Center, and we'll listen to music by Rick Borg and Walter Peterson of Sioux City. It's going to be a great time. Hopefully you can listen then. Also this Saturday, Battery Park will be packed with the mouth-watering smell of smoked meat this Saturday. It's the fourth annual Camp High Hopes Rib Fest. Siouxland Public Media's Steve Smith talked with the event organizer Sarah Morgan about this weekend's competition.
Back for another big-time summertime kind of event. It's Sarah Morgan, who is, what are you at Camp High Hopes, the executive director?
No. I'm the advancement director.
Advancement director.
Marketing and fundraising and special events.
Okay. And it's the fourth annual Rib Fest, or maybe fourth plus a couple
yes.
of other years.
We've done Rib Fest for several years now, but this is the fourth year that we've had it at Battery Park, Hard Rock Battery Park this year.
Okay. So now Rib Fest, it's ribs and it's chicken and and people compete from all
yes.
over.
So this is what makes Rib Fest a little unique. So it's a Kansas City Barbecue Society sanctioned event, which means I get to invite teams from all over the area to come in. They get to cook the best barbecue that they possibly can, and then they compete for team points for KCBS. And so that way it attracts some of the best teams around. But also, if you're not a KCBS team, you can also participate and just cook ribs for fun as well.
So if you are not part of the KCBS, Kansas City Barbecue Society, mm-hmm. so if you're not part of that, you can still participate. And can you compete, though?
Oh, yes, you definitely can still compete. Yep. So you can sign up. You can be a part of the team. There's very little cost to the teams. You got to pay the Kansas City Barbecue sanctioned competition fee. But beyond that, all of the meat is donated by Tyson.
Oh, so you don't even have to bring your own meat.
Exactly.
Oh.
Yes. So all of the ribs and chicken are provided by Tyson. And that way people can come, and the people who come to taste all of this wonderful barbecue, they're the real winners here, because they get to taste some amazing barbecue. The teams, they don't have a lot out of pocket expense, and so it's a win-win for everyone.
So when did the teams kind of come into town and set up? This all takes place at Battery Park, right?
It does, yeah. So kind of everything gets going on Friday. That's when we start setting up, Friday the 21st. We'll come in about noon. We'll be setting up, you know, fences and trailers and all kinds of stuff. And then the teams arrive usually around 3 o'clock. They set up their little spaces. boxes, their tents, their tables. We have a cook's meeting, and then we distribute the meat, and some of them, they start prepping their meat right away. You know, they're pulling off the membranes, they're brining their meat, they're seasoning the meat overnight, and then they start cooking early Friday or Saturday morning, and then it's open to the public 11 a.m. on Saturday the 22nd.
So now the thing about ribs, and most people, I think, know this, you have to cook them really slow at a really low temperature, so that's kind of why they need so much prep time,
right?
I'm sure.
Yeah, so you walk into Battery Park and you're bombarded with all of those yummy flavors of barbecue.
So how far do these teams come from?
So this year we have some teams from Lincoln, Omaha area, obviously a lot of Sioux City surrounding areas. Some possibly Des Moines team might sign up this year as well. So kind of the region.
So kind of we're just a few days away from the mm-hmm. Ribfest now. When is the deadline to sign up?
You know, we will take teams up until probably Thursday night, because then we really do have to set, you know, here's your place, here's your number, here's your information. So we will take teams until Thursday night.
And how many teams did you have last year? How many teams are you expecting this year?
Yeah, last year we had about 23 teams. This year, we're probably going to be right around there. We might be probably around 20 teams, I would say. So between 20 and 23 again this year is kind of what we've been maintaining.
So what do you expect as a person that's not affiliated, doesn't have to do all the jobs that you're doing, all the jobs that the barbecue folks are having to do? If you're just walking into Ribfest, what can you expect?
Okay, so this is the best part. This is really a fun public family-friendly event. And that's really what we want. It's kind of, Ribfest has really kind of become that must-attend family event of the summertime. You know, bring your family, come listen to great music, eat great barbecue, chill out and relax in the beautiful weather. That's really what we hope people to do. You know, and you don't even realize you're raising money for Camp High Hope. So you buy a $10 wristband to get in. 12 kids and under are free. If you want to taste the food, you buy a $10 punch card. So that allows you for 5 tastings. So that five rib bones, 5 chicken pieces, 10 sides. 1 punch equals 2 sides. And those are Famous Dave's yummy sides, coleslaw, beans, their cornbread, and cookies.
Okay. So that sounds like, and you mentioned music. There's music pretty much throughout the day, basically.
There is. Yeah. So Hard Rock does an amazing job of really finding those local bands that we want to highlight and that are perfect for that Ribfest vibe. You know, they really just, they know their music. They know that we want to have that kind of a feeling at Ribfest. And so we have some great new bands this year, and then 1 returning favorite.
Okay, so what are the bands coming?
Yeah, so at 11 o'clock when the festival kicks off, we have Brainwreck, and this is a band made up of Hard Rock employees.
Right.
So they take the stage first at 11. They play till about 11:30. And then we have the Ruralists from right up the road in Sioux Center, Iowa, and they'll be playing for about 45 minutes until 12:30.
We like the Ruralists, so we're going to play a little bit of one of their songs from a while. This is on their first album, I think. It's called Black and Achromatic. It's the Ruralists. What time are they going to be on stage?
They will take the stage at 11:45.
Okay.
Beating slow down. I've got all these broken parts, and I'm wondering if I could stick around for a while. For a while.
That's one of their kind of lower tempo numbers, but I really, really like that song. It's just the great, visual sort of a lyrical band there out of Sioux Center.
Mm-hmm.
From the Sioux County area. And then who else is going to be there?
Yeah, so once they finish up, we have our big rib eating contest, and that begins at 12:45. And so that also gives time for Ultraviolet Fever to take the stage. Which...
So how do you get into the rib eating contest?
Oh my gosh, this is so much fun. So it grows every year. We started this a couple of years ago just as kind of an afterthought of, you know, maybe that would be kind of fun. Had a huge turnout. So then we decided to make it a little bit bigger, a little bit better. Last year we had kids, teens, and adults doing it. So we had 3 rounds. We had great prizes. This year we're making it even bigger and even better, and we have some amazing prizes this year. All you got to do is sign up. Tell me you want to be a part of the rib eating contest and you're in.
Oh, well, that's super easy.
Yeah, you don't have to like take a test or anything. we don't require aces only. Yeah.
So what was the record last year? What is the record currently stand at?
Oh my gosh.
Number of ribs consumed.
So the teens and adults had an eat off last year where, you know, they both ate the same number of ribs.
Uh-huh.
So we had to do like a 3-minute you know, final battle like between the two. Death, yeah, sudden of death of riveting. Oh my gosh.
Which actually could have led to a death if it kept going.
Yeah. Their stomachs exploded with yummy ribs. I don't remember how many they ate, but all of us were like, wow, like that's a lot of ribs.
All right, we've been talking to Sarah Morgan. Ribfest gets underway Saturday. It's at Battery Park. What time does it start?
11 o'clock to 4 o'clock. You want to come early for the best selection, though, of all of the different choices of barbecue. But we'll have plenty of food. We've never run out of food. You'll just run out of choices, so you got to get there early.
All right, we're going to leave you with Ultraviolet Fever, who's wrapping up afternoon of festival at Ribfest. For Sealand Public Media, I'm Steve Smith.
Thanks a lot, Steve, for that interview. I think he wants to try that competition to eat the most ribs. Maybe Steve will win. I bet you're nice and hungry now, right? I know I am. The stomach is grumbling. Up next, station manager Mark Munger with the leader of the local NAACP, Ike Rayford.
In New York, tenant advocates are celebrating a sweeping new law designed to protect renters across the state.
There's the right to make sure repairs are done, or at least being able to have some comfort in making a complaint to like buildings and codes and not feeling like you're about to be retaliated against.
Landlords say the law will reduce the supply of affordable housing. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, kicking off this afternoon at 4 o'clock on Siouxland Public Media.
I'm joined by Ike Rayford, the president of the Sioux City NAACP. Ike, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Juneteenth is a holiday that I think a lot of people overlook, but it is an important holiday.
Absolutely. It's definitely something that I believe everyone should understand and be aware of.
Tell us the history of Juneteenth.
So the history behind Juneteenth is that on June 19th, 1865, and this was 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, the state of Texas didn't get word. And so 2 years later, word was finally delivered to those slaves that were in Texas. And from that point on, it has been a celebration every year commemorating June 19th because the last known slaves were told that they were free.
So do we know why it took so long for word to get to that?
Well, you know, there can be quite a few reasons
why. I imagine there are many stories.
You know, some of the things that I've heard was that because in the way that, you know, obviously this was before social media and the media as we know it, but word just didn't get back. There wasn't a lot of Union soldiers at the time, so they just didn't have the capacity to get down to Texas. And who knows, you know, Texas was its own kind of, you know, place. And so they may not have even wanted Union soldiers down there.
Are there any documents of how the news was received or what happened when they did receive the news?
You know, from what I understand and from what I've learned is that there was great jubilation. There was a true party celebration. There is down in the state of Texas, and I believe at the University of Texas, the at their library, and there is some information that is. And, you know, over the years with celebrations, people have just kind of given their take on it. But I think the one consistent known fact is that they were late. And once the slaves found out, they were appreciated it, and they always wanted to celebrate it.
Mm-hmm. So today, as people think about Juneteenth and perhaps celebrate it, what do you recommend reflecting upon?
At the end of the day, you know, we try not to talk about slavery too much. That's one of those things that's a tough, it's a hard subject to talk about because people think it's just the past. But, you know, what we've come to realize is that when we don't talk about it and we don't have a healing process in that, then there's hard sentiments and just, you know, people feeling real bad and crazy about what's going on. And so although we celebrate the emancipation, we still want to remember what our forefathers had to go through. And so really, in a sense, we're celebrating that. We're celebrating that they had an opportunity to become free and have a life that what we say Americans are meant for.
I've got a babe, but shall I keep him? 'Twill come the day when I'll be weeping. But how can I love him any less? This little babe upon my breast.
Thanks for listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media, KWIT Sioux City, and KOJI Okoboji. I'm Sheila Brommer in for Mary Hartnett. Special thanks this week to all of our guests and interviews by Siouxland Public Media's Steve Smith and Mark Munger. And join us this Friday for another special live show. We're going to celebrate the first day of summer by getting in touch with nature. We're going to be live at 9 a.m. at the Dorothy Pico Nature Center with some great music and insight from environmental and wildlife experts and plus more. We're going to leave you this afternoon with more music from Kurt St. Cyr. Our thoughts are with the family and friends of both Kurt St. Cyr and Frank Lemire, two men gone too soon. Thanks for listening to Siouxland Public Media.